Conti, bella palla per Rebic, Rebic Ibra, Rebic, 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 il tiro, goal!
Hello everyone and welcome to another episode of the Sempre Milan podcast. I'm your host, Ollie Fisher, joined by the returning Gian Mario.
Hey, oops, lads, you all right? It's good to be back.
And Stefano.
Good to be back, good to be back.
I'm outnumbered. I'm outnumbered. Didn't think this through. Yeah, that's true. Stefano, respect for going neutral, but me and Jan have decided, no, it's time. So, yeah, a bit of context. We're recording this a day in advance because we all have prior commitments tomorrow, shall we say, when England take on Italy in the Euro final. We'll talk a little bit about it at the end of the episode and give our predictions and stuff like that, but it should be fun. You know, it's the final that we probably all wanted, and it should be a good day, and I think the country will come to a standstill for it, which, and we might get a bank holiday out of it, who knows, we'll see. But yeah, first of all, let's talk about some Milan news, shall we? This is one of those where, you know, the mercato's moving now, finally. We're starting to see some things happen, which is fantastic. Done deals, players that have signed on a permanent basis, but then also some operations that are set to be completed next week as well. For all those people who were moaning that the management can't get anything done, negotiations are dragging on. I can't think of anyone in particular, but... here it is. It's like we had them all queued up and now we're pushing them through, and it's fantastic to see. So as you can see, Sandro arrives. That's the starting topic. We knew this was happening. We talked a little bit about it last time, but Tonali has arrived on a permanent deal. He's signed until, was it 2025 or 2026?
2025. I think they did. Was it? I thought they were doing the whole four-year deal thing. I don't know if it was...
No, I think they're giving it five.
Oh, okay, interesting.
I'm sure it's 2026.
Oh, fair enough. Anyway, one of those ones.
Five-year deal, so it's until 2026.
Oh, five-year deal. Oh, fantastic, yeah. Even better.
Yeah, that is really good. So the operation is as follows. 10 million paid loan, which has already been done. So it was meant to be a 15 million option to buy and 10 million in further bonuses. It's actually ended up being 6.999 million 999 euros. Plus 3 mil in potential bonuses, plus Giacomo Olzer going the other way from the Primavera, but we retain a buyback clause on that, on him. So the reason that it's not 7 million euros is because Massimo Cellino might be the most superstitious man on the planet. He doesn't want the total fee to be 17 million because he considers it an unlucky number. And we weren't allowed to announce his signing on Tuesday because he considers Tuesday to be an unlucky day. So we had to do it on Wednesday. So that's just two quirks of a deal that feels like it's been a long time coming. Perhaps one of the most important things in a summer which we've already seen Donnarumma, sorry, number 99, and Çalhanoğlu, I don't know what we're calling him, the traitor, whatever.
Twat, yeah.
leave for more money elsewhere. Sandro Tonali has decided to take a pay cut to join us. He was originally going to get 1.6 million net per season. That's what the reported amount is. He's going to be joining on 1.2 million net per season. We'll come on to Calabria's renewal as well and the gesture behind that, but do you think that is like just exactly what you want from a player, you know, someone who proves that they want to be here, they're committed to this club, someone who says they support the club and actually, you know, there's actions to back up the words? Happy?
Yeah, over the moon about it, to be honest. He's shown his true colours, shown his love for the shirt, and in a period where we're going through players, not much loyalty left in football, and he's shown a lot of loyalty now by signing, taking a wage cut to make his dream come true, and I think he's going to be a pillar of our future, really.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I spoke about it last week. I think it's a good point. Like, you know, regardless if people look at it as a cheat from the club, banking on the fact that he loves the club so much. Yeah, in the day, smart business. You know, Maldini knew what exactly he had to work with. The fact that there wasn't really many other buyers from the rest of Italy. Tonali didn't really want to go to anywhere else. He's young enough to also understand the situation and also the love for the club to take a pay cut. It's all it was all win-win, you know. It's a fantastic deal, and it's fantastic that he was willing to also take a pay cut, because I would have understood if he wanted to keep the 1.6 salary, because I think that's pretty, it's pretty fair for someone of his quality. But also at the same time, I think because he knows of his age and he isn't a first teamer yet, he understands that there's potential to earn more in, as his career develops, and potentially we may see a player go and he might get that first team spot, and thus the salary will come with it. So yeah, I think it's a fantastic deal.
I think the best thing about it being a 5-year deal is we don't need to worry about giving him a contract extension on our terms till 2026. And by that point, hopefully we've won a couple of trophies, been in the Champions League for the next 5 years, and we can give him the big pay rise that he'll deserve, hopefully by that point. Anyway, and he should get a lot of game time this season, especially in January, providing he's not injured, when Kessié and Bennacer go to the Africa Cup of Nations. He may be able to cement a starting role.
Definitely.
Yeah, I think that'll happen. I think he was almost like a victim of circumstance last season. You know, he arrived, he had a shortened pre-season because of his injury and because of how long it took to get the deal over the line. He had to adapt to a new system. He was used to playing a deeper of a midfield three at Brescia, and now he had to come into a double pivot. Not only that, but a double pivot that was established with Bennacer and Kessié as two of the best in their position in the league. But we saw a bit of out with him towards the end of the season, and I think that there was never going to be any doubt that he would stay regardless of what the terms of the deal was. Delighted that we've got it over the line. Contract until 2026, as you say, that's his long-term future resolved, and he's definitely going to get more opportunities next season and a full pre-season, which I think is very, very important in terms of how he can adapt and fit in. I mean, he's 21 years old, very impressionable as a player. He can learn, he can adapt to stuff, and he will. And I think we'll see him come back next season as a different player to what we've seen. I really do. It's just natural, isn't it? You give players time to prepare, to learn a system without the pressure, like it being full-on game pressure to start with, which is what it was. Then they're going to be all the better for it. And I'm looking forward to seeing him next season. Next bit of... go on.
Yeah, I was just going to say, with Kessié being at the Tokyo Olympics too, it's going to give him a real good chance in pre-season to understand the partnership with Bennacer, which maybe he hasn't done yet. Obviously, he got the partnership kind of sorted with Kessié, but now it's his chance with Bennacer during pre-season, and maybe Kessié might have to fight for his place when he comes back. Not fight for his place, but might take him a while to get back into it, especially not having a full pre-season and it being extended due to the Tokyo Games and stuff like that. It could be Tonali's chance to shine, really.
That's a good point, because I think with Kessié, it's we put so much like demand off him, because obviously he's always fit. Never one injury in what, 4 years for the player is fantastic. But at the same time, I feel like we're kind of like pushing our luck with that one. Whereas I would like to see us in a position where we can optionally rotate, because we have players of great quality, and just be like, look, you can sit this game out. Of course, there's going to be great games of great importance every midweek, so every weekend going in the first half of the competition, because the Champions League and the Serie A are going into the Coppa Italia in December. So there's going to be multiple opportunities for Tonali. And yeah, I think it's right. I think there's so much heart, there's so much desire from the player that it's ultimately just going to click. I feel like it's going to click for him. It's just sort of like a match made in heaven. And I feel like he's the player that all us fans resemble on the pitch. He's living out his dream. So I feel like I've got complete confidence in him sort of having a better campaign next season.
Yeah, totally agree. And, you know, we will be a better team for it if he does, because depth is so important in another season when we're going to play over 45 games if things go well. Yeah. Maybe 50 if we get out the Champions League group stages. And then I suppose we'll do the other done deal, and then we'll talk about the Kessié thing. Davide Calabria. Now, this is one of those that nobody really reported that it was a done deal until it was done, you know. All the media headlines seem to suggest there was still a distance between the two parties. But this just reaffirms my belief that when you've got a mutual understanding of what everyone wants to happen, so the club want to keep him, the player wants to stay, and his agency are willing to respect that wish, you can get something done in 24 hours if you really want to. I think that's exactly what's happened. You know, obviously, they're fluid situations. Talks go on for a while, but this one just seemed to be bang, done like that. And then the announcement was going to be tomorrow, and then it was actually announced. So this is a similar one to Tonali, I suppose, whereby we've resolved the long-term future of a key player moving forward before a very important season for us. And he's another player who is living out his dream as a boyhood fan of the club. And I don't think that you could argue there is a more deserving player of a contract extension, because he didn't have a great season in 2019-20, let's be honest. There was injuries, suspensions. I think he got a couple of red cards that season. Just general poor form as well. And in the last campaign, he had a real bounce back. And now he's basically become immovable, when this time a year ago, we were talking about selling him to Cagliari or something like that. So, yeah, I think he's really deserved this one.
Yeah, I'm over the moon with it. I'm a massive fan of Calabria, and I think it's one part of the defence, again, that just now sorted for the next 4 years. And again, same with Tonali, 4 years' time we come to it, he's probably going to deserve the big pay rise, and hopefully we're going to be able to pay it then. So it's just nice to see. Nice to have players that want to be here now, get rid of snakes and rats, and just have players that want to be here.
Yeah, no, good point about the old bounce back, because we have to look back to Conte, who was the starting right back in the 2019 season, especially towards the tail end of it. I think Conte got an injury maybe in at the end of the season, or maybe before the season started. That gave Calabria his chance, and obviously didn't look back from then. And obviously he was playing so well that Conte just couldn't get a sniff in, and was eventually loaned out in January. So fantastic on the bounce back sort of thing. Amazing as well to see another boyhood player, you know, 15 years with the club, I think it's been, since the youth team. It's fantastic. He's deserved it. I think the only thing as well, that watching the Euros, it kind of disappoints me, is that like Tonali and Calabria aren't there. I know Calabria was due to injury, but I'm watching it and I'm just thinking, like, oh, these two boys deserve to be, or at least will be at some point, in the Italian national side sometime soon. And you know, starting, maybe Tonali might be a bit of a different one. He has to surge a bit more in his Milan career. But it's fantastic we got this one over the line, because, you know, we all love Calabria and what he does. So, really happy that it's got done.
Yeah.
I think my only concern with Calabria is there's no denying his ability, but there has been a pattern when he's played really well, then he's had an injury, and then it's taken a while to get back to it. So I'm just hoping... Yeah. He puts this injury straight behind him straight away and carries on his good form. I don't want to be waiting another, you know, 6-7 games for him to get back. He needs to just hit the ground running straight away. That's my only concern with him, but I'm sure he'll...
I was going to say, on the injury thing, it's actually, I thought complete confidence that it was going to get done this summer, was because the same... Yeah, he skipped getting the hernia operation to the end of the season, basically putting his Euros... he was not going to go to the Euros by getting a hernia operation at the end of the season. He could have gone if he got it done, you know, 3-4 weeks before the season finished, but he put club above country and made me completely confident the deal was going to get done this summer, because that's where his intention is at. And it's sort of like, why do all that to get us into the Champions League and then to only be whilst for another year? It's kind of made no sense. Yeah. So I was like completely confident this would happen.
Yeah. Fair point. That was a pretty big sign when you think about it. And one thing to mention, I suppose, he has got a big pay rise. He was on 1.1 million net per year, and he's gone up to around about 2.5 million, I think. I think the market dictates that. There's not an abundance of quality fullbacks in Serie A. I wouldn't feel confident if we were to lose Calabria to go out and get a quality replacement, you know, on the budget that we have. So I think it's one of them where you've got to pay it. But also, I think there's a loyalty bonus in there as well. And also, this is probably Calabria's prime contract, you know, if you believe in players signing a contract when they're 24-25, which will be the biggest of their career. I think that's what it is, and it's reflected in the pay rise that he's received, whereas Tonali, in 3 years will be as old as Calabria is now, so that's like, you know, he's got a bit more time to get to that status. But delighted, another one done. Third done deal of the episode. This one hasn't been formally announced yet, but in a week's time, we hope to be able to bring pictures of a gorgeous Frenchman holding a Milan shirt. Olivier Giroud. This one dragged on for so long. Obviously, he was at the Euros with France. Then when they got knocked out by Switzerland, we thought that we'd hear some news. But it turns out he's sort of gone away on holiday, which is fair enough. But in the meantime, there's been negotiations with Chelsea, who had exercised their option to extend his deal by another year. So we had to negotiate a fee with them. Anyway, long story short, the deal's done. 1 million goes to Chelsea, plus 1 million in bonuses that are apparently quite difficult to achieve. And then the player will sign a 2-year deal at either 3.5 or 4 million net, depending on who you believe. I'm surprised that this one has ended up getting over the line. And I know you were confident, Stefano, but I was just thinking this is one of those where if they really wanted it to happen, surely it could get done pretty quickly. Like, Giroud's given everything he can to Chelsea. He helped them win a Champions League. Maybe it's the right time for their paths to separate. And then it just dragged on and on. But then like that, bang, he's having his medical on Monday. Are we happy?
On the moon, I think it's an upgrade on Mandzukic from last season's squad. I still think we'll need another striker. But when you look at it in terms of last year's squad and then upgrading, he's up there. And I think, to be fair, I don't know what Ibra's injury is like, because you see him diving off boats and flying in the sky on jet skis after 2 days after an injury, and you just think, what are you doing? But I think Giroud could be a starter next year. And I think he's got what it takes to be a starter in Serie A, especially at his age, when you look at, like, Edin Dzeko, for example, who can score 15, 16 goals a season at that age. So I think Giroud's got it in him.
Yeah, we got a question which I want to ask now. It came from Elisa. You guys reckon that Giroud will be a starter or a backup? How do you think Pioli will use him? So, Jan, you've kind of answered that. Stefano, what do you reckon?
Well, that's a tough one, isn't it? I'd definitely start for the start of the season, just because Ibra's injury would just dictate how long. I think it gives us a bit more leeway as well. We can sort of take our time getting him back, as opposed to we need you to come back now because we have no other option. So that's a good thing. I think he will start off as starter, and depending on how his form goes and the extent of Ibra's injury, I think he'll continue with that. But I don't think we're going to sign another striker at his level. Obviously, probably a younger profile will come in to learn off Ibra, to learn off Giroud. But yeah, I think it's a fantastic signing. I'm completely confident it was going to happen, because I just feel like, you know, when you know the Chelsea squad and you know that Tuchel wasn't playing in towards the end of the season, I just feel like he wanted another option. And obviously, he was linked with Inter in previous years. A move to Italy was probably wanted for him, and Milan are a more appeasing option now because we have space for him to come into the squad, be a potential first teamer. And also, you know, we've got the Champions League to offer. So, yeah, I think it's win-win for all parties, really. Chelsea get a little bit of money. We get a Champions League, bona fide Champions League player, plays near enough in every competition. It was pretty much a starter for France until Benzema came back. So I don't think we've got to look at it with different goggles to what Mandzukic was coming back to Europe, because, you know, he was obviously out in China, I think. And Qatar. He came back. It was Qatar even, yeah. Yeah. So obviously, you come back to a much more competitive style of football, and I think Giroud's just never lacked off that. And you can speak to any Chelsea fan, they will heap praise on him. He scored important goals in important games, near enough fit quite most of the time, despite his age, and he'll give you 100%, and he never complains, regardless of his whether it's he's the second striker or the third striker. And that goes all the way back to Arsenal fans as well. They say the exact same thing. So it's fantastic. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think Giroud is a player. He's a striker who's got a lot to give. He may be 34 years old, and he may turn 35 during the next season, but he's never been blessed with bags of pace, so it's not like he has that to lose. And I think Jan's, you know, allusion to Edin Dzeko is pretty bang on. He was a player who came from winning trophies in the Premier League and made a big impact, because he is one of the most streetwise footballers, and I think Giroud will be the same. He contributes so much to the teams that he's in, be it France, be it Chelsea. As you said, nothing but a professional attitude. He's just got on with his job, head down. And I think in terms of what his role will be next season, I'd be interested to see what he does at the start of the season. I don't think we'll rush Ibra back. I don't see why we should rush Ibra back, because I think it could be a big mistake if there are some doubts about his knee injury. Obviously, it had to be operated on, and the initial recovery time was 8 weeks. So I'd say give him 10 weeks, you know, rather than let's try rushing back after 7. That doesn't make a lot of sense to me. So that makes me think that someone like Giroud could be our starting centre forward heading into next season. And then if he hits the ground running, who's to say that he doesn't become, you know, the more regular starter in Serie A, and Ibra's the option in other games. And you know, the thing with Giroud is what Ibra said about him is correct. He was asked what he would think about Giroud arriving, and he said, we need players like that. We need players who have won things and know how to win things. And it's half mentality, half what he'll bring in terms of ability. The mentality element of it is huge. He's a world champion with France. He won the Champions League last season. He's won other trophies at other clubs during his career. that is so big for a young group, and particularly a young group of forwards that we have. You know, you've got Brian Diaz, 21, Salamaker's 22, whoever the new right winger might be, but then you've got Liao and Haugen if they hang around. These are young players who will thrive off having a centre-forward who is expert at build-up play and can just raise the levels in training. So I'm looking forward to having him here, and it's such a cheap deal. You know, if you just factored in net salary, the whole lot comes to less than 10 million, and it could be worth its weight in gold, to be honest, with what he brings. Mm. Right, next one. Let's go on to rumours now. I mean, Brahim Diaz, we'll probably talk about next week. That's expected to be completed next week as well, but there's so many different figures being reported around. I think we'll hold on until that one gets done next week and talk about that then. The other thing to talk about, which is kind of dominating the media a little bit at the moment, is Kessié's renewal. Now, I think it's of paramount importance that we get this done before the new season starts. I know he's got to go to the Olympics. I would actually try and get it done before the Olympics so he can go there with peace of mind and come back and everything's already sorted. I don't know if it does get done before the Olympic Games in Tokyo.
I could be wrong, but I think, hasn't he already started travelling there? Because he'll have to do the bubble and all that before they arrive, because Japan are pretty strict, aren't they? So, and he's not at PC now, is he?
I think that the football runs that until August, starts in a couple of weeks, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And then it could run until early August. So he'll still get 3 weeks when he comes back, because he's not having a holiday before the season starts. But it'd be good if we can get things, you know, agreed as soon as possible. The latest reports suggest that we're willing to satisfy his demands of 6 mil net per season, whether that's fixed plus bonuses or whatever it might be. We talked about this a bit earlier, but I think that I've said this phrase so many times and people must be sick of it now, but this Elliot project, if you're going to back youth players and you're going to bring them in because of their potential on low salaries, you have to be prepared to pay them when things go well. Because if you really do back your recruitment team, these young players come in, they start developing into, you know, some of the best players in the world in their position. Eventually, their salary is going to have to reflect that. And your wage budget, yes, we've cut it massively, but we have to expect it to inflate again as the level of the squad goes up. Otherwise, what's the point? Let's just become Red Bull Salzburg. Let's sell every good player that we have. And this is one of those exceptions that we absolutely have to make. You know, a constant 40 game per season man. Yes, he's had some ups and downs in his form over his 4 years at the club so far. But the last 18 months, he has been potentially the best defensive midfielder in Serie A. I'd probably argue he is the best defensive midfielder in Serie A. And it's right that he's going to be rewarded for it.
I don't think... They were about to make an exception with Donnarumma and give him the 8 million that he wanted. So I think they will make the exception with Kessié. I just think it will be a matter of formalities and getting it done when he returns back to Milanello, and they'll just get it all sorted. Then I'm really not worried about it. And I don't think the management will make the same mistake. I think it'll be one of them that you either sign now and set, commit your future, or we're going to have to sell you this summer and move on.
Yeah, I think as well... I mean, if you talk about Red Bull, was it Red Bull Salzburg or Leipzig, whoever it is, the selling sort of club, at least their players are under contract. You know, we don't really have much to stand on if we have a player with 1 year left in his contract. There's no, you know, if we get this done, you've got to think of it. If you do want to sell him, like if the goal is a bid comes in for so high within the next 5 years that we've signed him on the renewal for, then at least it'll be like a staggering bid and we won't be in a situation that we've been in the past with Donnarumma, for example. You know, I feel like it's a no-brainer. The guy guarantees you 50 games a season, got double digits of goals last season, despite the fact of all penalties, but you can't. Ibra shows us that not every penalty is a guaranteed goal. So, and it's just and they come up in big games as well. You know, the two against Atalanta, and let alone you take away his goals, what he brings you to on the pitch, which is just complete strength, physicality, taking the ball to the corner flag in the last minute against Atalanta. Just he's the pure heart of the team. He's the coolness of the team. And I feel like if we don't get it done this summer, Milan fans will make their voices known, especially in Milan, to Maldini, basically saying, like, look, Donnarumma, we understood due to the financial implications of getting a renewal done, and also Raiola, and then future renewals, etc. Çalhanoğlu, it was pure snakery, so we got no sort of issue with the club on that one. But Kessié, I think, is one where you just really have to show that you're handling things in a different manner. There is a reasonable understanding of how you're going to deal with renewals based off, you know, a maximum value you can give a player, but also giving exceptions as well. And if we may have to sell him in the future, at least we're going to get good value off it. But in the meantime, let's just enjoy him and keep it going for the next foreseeable few years or whatever. So.
Yeah, and it's been nice to hear as well, like everything in the media has suggested that the player wants to stay as well. You know, he's been at Milan for 4 years now, and some players get itchy feet, I suppose, and they fancy trying a new challenge, especially if like PSG are knocking around. I could understand the temptation. However, I think he understands that he is a symbol of this current team and he enjoys feeling like a leader. You know, that's now going to be reflected with a nice healthy pay rise. He's probably going to triple his salary, but it's been fully earned. He's been reliable, incredibly professional, and he's the president for a reason. You know, that everyone loves him. The team love him. The squad love having him around. And it's one of those. You know, the moment that he puts pen to paper, I think so many people's minds will be at ease after that because. It's a statement of intent. You know, if losing Donnarumma was perhaps a bit of a dent in the seriousness of the project because supposedly one of our own decided to go elsewhere in the search of getting a trophy more quickly or in the search of a paycheck, renewing Kessié, renewing Calabria, keeping all these players that we've had is perhaps a pretty big sign that we should be taken seriously and the management should be taken seriously. So I look forward to...
I was going to say, like, you're right about him being the best DM in Italy. I think that's a no-brainer right now. If you're going to base it the last 18 months, he is. He was in many teams, people's teams of the season. And I think if you look back at Donnarumma, you'd probably say he's the best keeper in Serie A. And to obviously lose him on the free is a bit harsh, but you understand about the what happened there, the financial and obviously Raiola. And we've got a good replacement in as well. So then think about in a year's time losing the best DM in the league and probably Calabria is the best right-back. You need to handle those two negotiations very carefully because losing all three would be absolutely criminal. But luckily, we've got Calabria over the line. Donnarumma, you just sort of understand the situation there. But Kessié, I think, as well, just bag that. So it's two out of three that you sorted.
Yeah, and then there will be others to discuss as well. This is the thing with it now. And I do understand the worries of those people who have said, once you start handing out those big salaries to certain squad members, others are going to be knocking on the door and saying, where's my slice of the pie? I wouldn't be surprised if we negotiate a renewal with Teo, for example, that gets him on the par with Calabria in terms of what he earns. I think Simon Kjær will probably get a bit of a pay rise as well because his contract runs out in 2022, but it sounds like there should be no problems extending his stay either. And then you look at players like Bennacer as well. He's probably going to be thinking, you know, hang on, my midfield partner is on six times what I'm on. I'd like a little bit, but that's what comes with it. You know, we make a technical and economic evaluation on every single player within the squad, and the management must know that having lost two, I say valuable assets, people might say Hakan has no value, but you know, they have a market value. You lose them for free. You can't afford to do it with the others, and you need to protect that core of players, especially the young ones are going to be here for many years to come. It's good news on every front, really. You know, we're bringing back players who we've had on loan, we're signing players permanently, renewals are getting done, and pre-season's only just started. So that is all good. No doubt we'll have a couple more deals to discuss next week. One thing I do want to mention while we're on the Mercato rumours topic, it does sound like we're after another young striker as well. And it might be Caio Jorge, or Jorge, I guess you would pronounce it, from Santos. He's 19. I think he's Brazil under-21 international. I don't know much about him. I haven't seen much Brazilian domestic football, unfortunately, because the games I have seen are mental. They're brilliant to watch. but he seems to be pretty talented, and I think that's the kind of player we're going to go after, is a young striker who can grow under two veterans. However, I might have wanted somebody a little bit more ready. So, like, if you could get a Belotti, perhaps, on a really cheap deal, then you'd do that. Or, like, an Edouard, who's someone who's played in European competitions. I don't mind. I trust our scouting. If they really fancy this guy from Santos, then I'd say give it a whirl because it would likely be a very cheap transfer or a free transfer because his contract's about to expire in December because their seasons run different to ours in Europe.
I think the only trouble now is because we play with one striker up front, Ibra's going to want game time because he's Ibra. Giroud, we're going to have offered game time and we're going to need to give it him. We can't pay him $4 million just to sit on the bench and play every once every 20 minutes, twice, like once a week or something. So it's going to need to be a young striker, but also a semi-ready one, because you can't hinder his development neither. And maybe Caio George, whatever he's called, is the perfect guy to come in and adapt to Serie A over the 6 months, 12 months, whenever we sign him, and then hopefully be more ready to step up when Ibra retires next season. Trying to sign a Belotti or Vlahovic now, I think, after signing Giroud, is just a bit unrealistic, because you can't have three ready strikers to play in one position next season. It's just not going to work.
No, they'd be stepping on each other's toes too much. Yeah, it's interesting. It feels like we've kind of been here before, doesn't it, with signing a teenage striker from Brazil to who would eventually work under Ibrahimovic, of course, in Pato. But, you know, hopefully Caio Jorge has a better injury record. That's all I'll say.
It would be a bit like romantic to get another Brazilian, isn't it? But I don't know. Yeah, I agree with Belotti as well. And plus, being an Italian national fan, I don't see a lot, to be honest. Obviously, that's going to require at least 20 million. I don't see a lot from him for me really to be convinced that he is going to add some significant quality to the squad. But obviously, yeah, he's going to be stepping each other's toes in the striker position. A young profile would be ideal, and go from there. Another thing as well, I'm just going to wrap up on the salary thing, is that Ibra's only really got 1 year left. So you've got to think of how the money is going to really revolve. Yeah. Once his salary goes, then that pot is now rotated and allows opportunities for further renewals. You talk about Teo, you talk about Benacer, who else you want to sort of do renewals for in the squad. The money's going to be there. So it's not as if like whatever money everyone's on now is going to be like that forever. There's going to be the rotation, and even Giroud might be on a 2-year deal. I don't know how long many years is on that, but that money once again will revolve around, and you factor in the development of a player and obviously the money going up. So but the Caio George kid, I don't really know much about him. So, but if it's a cheap deal, it's worth a punt as a third striker role. And I like a little Brazilian wild card just to throw into the mix.
It'd be good for if we were to ever go to, be it like during a game, or if we were to change system to two up front, he'd be a good player to play off a target man, I think, rather than an actual target man. He's been compared more to Shevchenko, but please, let's not do that.
I'd love a striker that just gets us off our feet, like Pato did. Yeah. Mourinho kind of did it. Because I suppose Leao's sort of doing it now, where he can take players on. But we don't have anyone in the team with a bit of flair that just wants to drive at opponents. And ain't scared of losing, not taking on his man. But I just want someone to get us off our feet, because football we play is exciting. Yeah. But we just need a bit of flair now in the team.
With Pato, I've never seen a goal since, you remember that one he scored against Barcelona in like the first 20 seconds? Like, I've never seen a goal like that, where you're watching it and you're thinking like, did he just, like, how could you do that? This is kind of like the Leao goal.
Against Sassuolo.
You're thinking like, that doesn't happen. This is too early into the game. You can't just hit the ball and then like hit it like Roadrunner and sprint onto it. And
amazing goal. Just,
brilliant goal.
I remember Pato's performance as well in the 5-2 against Napoli. And he absolutely ran them ragged, you know. What you say as well about us not having a player at the moment who's not scared of driving at his man and trying to beat them in isolation is true. I think back to the last title-winning team, how frustrating Robinho was to watch at times. But when he got it right, it was a goal. That was the thing, you know, and he scored double figures that season.
Cassano could, like, drive the players from time to time.
He was a great signing at the time. He got us over the line.
You know, Rabina reminds me of, and it's actually quite fitting because you're wearing his shirt, Raheem Sterling. Like, he is, honestly.
I know what you mean.
Like, they both miss sitters, frustrating to watch, but once they're clicking and they can run at the right back that they're just marking them, they are absolutely fantastic and unplayable. But he's absolutely frustrating. But yeah, Robinho, we need a player like that. I feel like Leao could be that. Leao really could be that, but something's missing at the moment. But
yeah,
I hope he can click. If he does stay, I really hope he can click. So I don't want it to be, I'm pro selling Leao. I do want to give him some chances, but he needs to click in this year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I don't know, if an offer comes in, he might fancy something new, but we'll see. There's been no movement on that front at the moment. Right, let's click the listener question thing and move on to listener questions. So Michael Gambino asks, what is the likelihood of Isco or Insigne coming into the team, and what is the amount they're willing to spend for an extra striker? Is Belotti priced out? So, I mean, we kind of talked about the striker thing. I don't think we'll allocate a big chunk of the budget towards what would ultimately be a third striker. I think we may invest an amount in a profile for the future that's interesting, but don't expect us to break the bank and now go and get Vlahovic after Giroud is going to arrive. Vlahovic might be a solution for next summer, let's say, if he fancies staying at Fiorentina for another season and developing, and then he may decide that next summer is the chance to move, and that's when we might be waiting with the big bid. And as for Isco and Insigne, I have to say I'm kind of apathetic towards both. Isco, I just feel like there's so many risks attached. He's 29 now. He's not had a good last few seasons. He earns 7 or 8 million per year. There's questions about his fitness because he's always injured. Real Madrid are actively trying to get rid of him, which doesn't seem to be a great sign. But then there is no doubting that he has credit in the bank when it comes to good performances. There's been plenty of games where you're like, whoa, this kid is pretty special, but he ain't a kid anymore. And yeah, I don't know. I would maybe explore it if the price was right to the extent that it didn't even feel like a gamble. But apart from that, I'm not too bothered.
Yeah, I think for someone who watches Insigne quite a lot, I'm not so sure. I mean, he likes his one shot. He has his typical one shot where he cuts in off the left and he gets the, you know, the in-swinger with the right foot. It's perfect. And, you know, the goal against Belgium was fantastic, and the one he got in a group stage was brilliant as well. But I just don't know with him. He's 29 years old. I think the money involved about like plus 20 million euros. I don't know. I mean, plus we got three left wingers still. None of them have been sold. So I don't really want another left winger. Regarding Isco, Risco, if you want to call it that. Isco, Risco.
wow, that's superb.
That was awful. yeah, I'm with you. It's too much. The salary as well. I would ideally like, you know, I came up with my theory of the attacking mids as well. I like a plethora of players in, but it would kind of require a domino effect. If it was just an attacking mid coming in right now, I like Sabitzer, because I feel like he gives you an option that's different to Brahim Diaz, pending his return back to the club. Brahim is more of like a sprinter. He's going to run at you, going to make defenders uncomfortable. Sabitzer is much more, it's part of the team, kind of like how Salamakers fits in as well. It gives you more of that, you know, defensive astuteness, but also adding a bit of quality up front. So I like Sabitzer, and also that's some money that he's not going to be on high wages. And he's also, the transfer deal might only cost about 15 to 20 million euros.
Mm-hmm. I think, with Lorenzo, if we sell Haug and you replace him with Insigne, it is an instant upgrade. I know age is a factor with how young Haug is and aging Insigne is, but I think it is an instant upgrade. It's a play that does get you off your feet, because when he drives at a right back, it's fascinating to watch. I don't think he'd arrive. I don't think he's going to leave Napoli, but I would be for it. And if one of Rebic and Leao potentially leaves too, then yeah, it'd make the squad a lot better. It'd make it more like a Champions League squad. With Isco, I'd just stay clear. I do like him as a player, but it's too much of a big risk. And we're at that stage now where if we want to be in the Champions League again next season, every transfer has to be right, and it's not worth taking a risk. It has to be spot on. Even if they're not, you know, the biggest of signings, the biggest players, it just has to be the perfect player for the perfect role just to get us another season in the Champions League, because all the hard work we've done this last 18 months will just be undone if we don't make Champions League next year, and it'll just be a massive fail and we'll be back to square one.
The number 10 signing is one that we really can't afford to get wrong. You know, okay, yeah, people say that jokingly anybody is an upgrade on Calhanoglu, the way that he played in big games and stuff. But we do actually need someone who contributes both on and off the ball. You know, the balance of the system is important. They need to be the link between the midfield and attack and all that. We know this by now. But they can't afford to get it wrong, because Brahim is going to have to be afforded another season of adaptation. He cannot be the starter, I don't think, anyway. I hope to be proven wrong on that, and he just, you know, picks up where he left off. But, yeah, this is one where we need to take time, consideration, perhaps see what opportunities come up. I won't use the jigsaw analogy again, but, you know, if it is the last piece, then excellent. And we'll see. We'll see. I still hold on to my suspicions that the name might not have been reported in the media yet. It could be Sabitzer now, but I think then it could be somebody that we're not expecting. You know, like Tadic came out of nowhere and then kind of got shut down.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Something like that. Something random.
I don't think it's going to be someone with a high salary. Let's put it that way.
No, I don't.
I don't think it's going to be Isco. I don't think it's going to be James Rodriguez, unless they make significant sacrifices for the club. So,
I'm still going to stick to my guns. I think Dybala's going to come out of nowhere. I'm so convinced by it. I've just got this feeling that Dybala's going to just kind of like when it was one of them signings that they just couldn't afford to make. Maldini's already kind of hinted that if something comes up, then we'll take it. And I think it would be a perfect signing. But with Hakan, you've got to replace 20 goals from last season. And it is hard, no matter which way you look at it, it still contributed 20 goals to last season's, achievements. So it is hard to replace. We can't replace him with someone small, but again, it has to be the right profile too.
Yeah. I'll leave it to them. We're not the experts on this. I trust Maldini to find the right guy. This question from Jake. I guess the indiscretion here is that obviously we're early in July, so the squad is not complete yet. But he says, do you think we can make the Champions League with our squad as it is, including Giroud?
No, I think
you look around at the other clubs, and you think, well, Inter have just lost Hakimi and not replaced him, so they're probably looking at their squad thinking it's incomplete. Juve will be the same because Allegri's come back and he's going to want investment. They need a midfielder, for example. So I don't think any of the top clubs in Italy will be really happy with their squad at the moment, apart from maybe Lazio, because they've just not lost anybody yet. But then Luis Alberto hasn't rocked up for pre-season, so that's an interesting...
They've lost a manager, so...
Yeah, that's true, but I think they've got a decent replacement in Sarri. I don't think there'll be too much of a drop-off there. Go on.
Yeah, sorry, if we're just going based off purely the squad as it is now, I don't think it gets Champions League football next year. I still think you've still got to replace Hakan. Like I said, Ibra's age and we don't know where his injuries are, and there's still some gaps to fill. So, yeah, I don't think we'd make Champions League with the squad as it is now. I think maybe fifth, maybe fourth, but I could see us finishing fifth.
And I think Maldini said something interesting on the first day of pre-season. He said that Milan's advantage heading into this season could be stability. While all the other teams have changed managers and their squads are set to be overhauled, maybe like after the post-lockdown run, we can capitalise on the momentum we have from last season. And who knows, if we manage to get to a position where we're top at Christmas this time, maybe this time it all falls right for us. We don't know, but it's going to be fascinating. And of course, it needs to be documented that there's over a month yet until the first game.
Obviously.
It's so long. I mentioned Luis Alberto briefly there. We did get a question from Milan Out Loud. Do you think Milan should take a gamble on his situation? I think Jan said it right in the group chat running earlier this week. His actions at the moment, not showing up for pre-season, probably exactly why we shouldn't be going and paying big money for a player like him.
Yeah, I mean, it wouldn't be the first time that we got a player in that had a bit of personal issues and handled themselves unprofessionally with their current club.
Yeah,
and it probably won't be the last either. So, I mean, I do love the player, but I think, if it gets into us, but also realistically the money involved and then talking about trading Romagnoli as part of the deal, I think it's too much. There's a lot of pluses about the player. I do like him a lot, but I think it's too much really with the figures involved. I don't know. And it does put a massive sour note on it because Lotito is just hard enough to negotiate with anyway. He's probably still pissed off that we gave him Musaccio. So, I don't know.
And Pepe Reina.
Who's actually not been too bad. But no. I think it's not a good look, but I don't think it's actually a realistic target. So, I don't know what his actions are there, whether it's with another club, whether he's just sort of like just hoping anyone's going to come in for him.
Yeah,
it's just the ambition.
It sounds like a Juventus sort of move to make, you know. So I'll let them go for that.
Yeah,
it
the
might
rumor
not
is so Spain
started. He might have just not got the email, and he's just chilling somewhere.
Yeah. Well, yeah, maybe he's got Corona or something.
Yeah, where's Mike Maignan? You know, he didn't even play for France. Is that
what's he need a holiday for? He's been travelling all around Europe for the last 3 weeks.
To Milanello.
I love a good conspiracy theory.
Yeah. That's a stretch. I was saying to you lads, it'd be funny if Maldini's been on the phone to Luis Alberto saying, "Here, just don't show up. We'll get this done. Don't you worry." But it sounds like he might go back to Spain. I think Sevilla or Atletico Madrid fancy that, and that can be when a player really sees an opportunity to return home. You know, return to their home country. I think that's when they can start to force it a little bit. But DePaul's still not been announced, which is quite a funny one.
Yeah,
can't believe how long that's dragged on. But it's going to get done. But I find it funny how there can be such a delay. Well, I'm going to read this out. This isn't really a question. This is more of a comment, but I will read it out because it's spot on. It's from Josip, and he says, "Thoughts on the ridiculous notion that we lost, in inverted commas, 50 million by having the two snakes." He's referring to number 99 and Twat. Are we calling him now? Yeah. "Thoughts on the notion we lost 50 million by having the two snakes leave for free, or that we could have sold them for 70 to 100 million in the last 3 years, we've had no offers for either, especially for Çalhanoğlu." I'm just going to agree with it. You know, I think it's ridiculously narrow-minded to think we could have cashed in 100 million combined for those two players. The offers never came when the contract situations were uncertain. The only did teams come forward when it became apparent that they might be available on free transfers. I don't blame the management for biding their time either. Frankly, if we'd have sold those two players ahead of last season, I don't think we'd have finished in the top four. You keep them, don't you, and hope that you can work something out during the season. And if not, then you've got two players for the system for the season to hope that you get Champions League, and then it makes it easier to replace them. So, yeah, I agree with that comment. Right, wrap it up. 50 minutes is a good effort, or however long I'll go on.
Just thought, do you think there is some truth into Cutrone potentially maybe coming back as a third choice on loan?
It keeps getting mentioned. It does keep getting mentioned.
I wouldn't be surprised. I wouldn't be surprised.
I really wouldn't be surprised. Not to say
I'm against it. I think it might not be a bad. I mean, obviously, his career hasn't gone in the direction that we thought, you know, most of us thought it would do, especially when he's playing quite a lot for us. But I don't know, I feel like it's not a bad shout. I think for a third role, you know, there's a lot of heart with the kid. He might come alive again, especially in the black and red. So
back in his comfort zone. Yeah.
It just happens with some players, doesn't it? Career moves don't work out and they just
he was pushed out
in certain places. And it's the type of player that I feel a lot more confident him coming off the bench with 20 to go and needing a goal. I'd feel like we could score a goal with him coming on. More than I would with other players, he's shown it before, and his goal scoring record really wasn't that bad with us. He was the highest scoring Primavera player in our history. I just don't think his career's over, and I really do hope he returns to us.
He's still got a lot of friends here, and I think the fans would all, I think they'd all approve it eventually. Some you know, don't go back to your ex, whatever the saying might be, but there's something there. I said when he left for Wolves, I don't think his story at Milan is done. I really don't. He said before that he hopes to come back one day. And also, it's one of those deals where if we get towards the end of the market and we haven't worked anything out, if we wanted to get it done, we could get it done in 10 minutes. You know, it's one of those deals, isn't it? I really think it'd be that advantageous. I don't think Wolves are that bothered about hanging on to him for much longer. The player would jump at the chance to come back. A bit like the Bakayoko thing. I think if we don't find anything better, however you want to word it, then it's one we could click our fingers and get done. Worth keeping an eye on, I reckon.
Yeah.
Right. Well, we'll end with a prediction, shall we? Feeling the tension in this episode. It's the day before the game. Tomorrow, we will know if I'm going to be miserable in the next episode or whether these two lads are going to be miserable in the next episode. One thing I will say is that seen a hell of a lot of back and forth on Twitter, as in like straight up abuse between England and Italy fans, which I find to be a bit of a shame. I mean, I know there's a lot of unbearable fans on both sides, let's be honest, potentially a higher percentage of English fans that just have this superiority complex. But I think Italy's unbeaten run and what have you has their fans on their high horse a bit as well, which I think makes it a better final for it. You know, both teams have got a lot at stake here, and I hope that the game reflects the occasion. That's what I'll say. I hope it isn't what I fear it's going to be, and that's a very tense and cagey affair between two teams whose strengths really are playing on the counter. But I don't know. I think that if I'm going to put my objective head on, I'll say that if we play well and Italy play well, you know, like 7 out of 10, let's say, I think we'll edge it. But I after that Denmark game, you know, ultimately we did scrape through in extra time. I know Italy won on penalties, but it was against Spain, who've been all right this tournament. But after the Denmark game, I'm a little bit worried that the occasion may get to us. So for that reason, I'm going to say that it will go to penalties, and England don't tend to win on penalties. So,
I heard during the Spain game, no team has ever won 2 penalty shootouts in the same Euro competition. So, if it does go to penalties, you might be
Italy
right.
Italy will be record breakers.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be a very, very boring nil-nil game. And I think Italy will edge it on penalties. Yes, that's just where that I see it going. But again, I think it is favourable for England. They've got, you know, 60,000 fans there. Home advantage. It is a big thing, and maybe they just edge it. But I will say, whoever loses tomorrow will go on to win the next World Cup. I feel that's where it's going. I think it's two really good sides, young, exciting players. I think Italy might edge it tomorrow with it being Chiellini, Bonucci's potentially last tournament, and then all the England players another year older next year. I think they'll win the World Cup. I do see it happening.
My money's going to be strongly on one of the South American countries, either Brazil or Argentina, because it's in Qatar and it's going to be absolutely roasting. I just feel like European teams don't tend to win tournaments outside of Europe. Yeah, it's quite a tough one. I know Germany won in Brazil, but that was the first time, I think. That was the first time a European team had won a World Cup outside of Europe. But no, both teams have got a very bright future. That's one thing I will say as well. You know, the core of Italy's midfield is young and exciting. You know, centre-back-wise, you're fine as well when Chiellini and Bonucci go, because players like Bastoni and Acerbi ready to step in. And England are looking pretty good too, you know. Plenty of young talent, plenty of young forwards. I just hope it's a better game than the one we're predicting. Stefano, what's your prediction?
Yeah, it's going to be a game of performances, isn't it? I think, you know, Mancini's probably got the edge on, you know, experience when it comes to the coaches. There are obviously some players that as well blow hot and cold. Sterling, you probably say before the tournament, shouldn't be a starter, but he's been fantastic throughout the whole competition. You know, I don't know if he's top. No, he's not top goal scorer for England at the moment. But anyway, he's been scoring consistently throughout the tournament, unlike Kane. Same could be said for players like Immobile for Italy. You know, are they just due a performance, you know, on the big stage like this? I think Italy will control a lot more of the tempo compared to what they were against Spain. Spain are just so good at handling the ball in the centre of the park. I don't think England have those sort of players. They are calm. They are, you know, aggressive. That's fine. But I just don't think they have players who can just, you know, Spain is something else. They're just something else. It's so tricky to play against. And Italy have their own strengths in that department. I feel like the midfield is superior. But when it comes down to individual moments, I don't trust Italy's forwards, other than Chiesa, really. I think Immobile, Insigne, too inconsistent. Berardi, not much there, really. Whereas England have players like Sterling, Kane, Grealish to come off the bench. Saka's fantastic. But yeah, I think it will kind of be quite a stale game. I think I don't think it goes to extra time for some reason. But I think it's like a 1-0 win. I think it's a 1-0 win, 0-0 at half time. England traditionally come out, start off both halves really well. And I think the goal will come in the like within 60, 70 minutes. And then
for Italy or 1-0 either way. Is that what you're saying?
I'm gonna go 1-0 England. Not to say I want that. I just think like Jan's saying, with the home support, ultimately with depth off the bench as well to call upon, that it takes is just a change, like putting on Grealish to to ignite sort of England's attack. And in that one moment, regardless if it's a dodgy VAR penalty,
or two balls on the pitch.
Oh, they picked the same VAR crew, aren't they, for the final as we had for the semis?
Well, I don't know. You never know. I don't really want to see another penalty shootout. I would love to see Italy break that sort of duck as well. Like, no team's won two penalty shootouts in the same Euro competition. It could be any of these sort of things, but I think realistically it's a 1-0 game because both teams don't concede many goals. And I think it's just going to be so cagey because it's a final. And then, 1-0 win full time to probably England. But I want to see that, say that's Italy. But you never know.
I think the first goal is very important. I know it's in any game, but I feel like if England go 1-0 up, then the crowd will it'll see them over the line. Whereas if Italy go 1-0 up and the crowd silence for, 5-10 minutes, and Italy can maybe nick another or really control the game, then I think England will struggle. But that first goal is going to be so
I will key. Say, when, I mean, looking at the Denmark game, I know Denmark aren't a bad side. They are a very good side, but obviously they're missing their talisman and they've got a lot of energy behind that as well. When England eventually took the lead in that game, and then Denmark was sort of having that moment in the second half, it's just like on the attack. Whereas really, I don't know, like when I saw Italy play Belgium, for example, and they were still in the lead and Belgium was still trying to claw it back, Italy was still controlling the tempo. I think England do struggle controlling, like game management, regardless of, obviously, late into the game, they have the depth, they have the legs for it, it's fair enough. But when it comes to these sort of moments, I don't think the midfield can control it as well as, say, as Italy does. So let's see. If Italy do
Italy are masters at it.
Yeah.
You know, they
if Italy take the lead, for example, I feel like I have more confidence on our team being able to control the tempo and controlling the ball a lot more than the other scenario where, say, if England take the lead and Italy just know, we'll probably know how to switch it up and then England will be sort of all hands on deck, really. So
we had a moment in the second half of the extra time against Denmark, though, where we kept the ball for 3 minutes and played something like 58 passes. Yeah. I'm hoping that is the turning point. And it's like, oh, actually, we can. But they were tired. Yeah. You know, it's a tired team. They're not going to be the same in 90 minutes. But I hope that we've added that edge to our game now because it's been missing for so long. We can be a little bit brittle mentally. But one thing I will say, I mean, the Twitter stuff's banter and it's funny. It's back and forth. I enjoy reading it and, like, I never get involved. I just think it's quite funny to read, how much some people genuinely believe that, you know, England are shit, Italy are far better, or vice versa. I think there just needs to be a general appreciation that this is going to be a final with two really good informed teams. And if it does go to penalties, for example, then perhaps it shows there is not much to separate them at all. So I hope for everyone who watches, whoever you're rooting for, well, it's England versus the world, innit, let's be honest. but we wouldn't have it any other way. That it is a fascinating spectacle. And I will say, good luck, lads. I hope you don't enjoy the game, but I hope you enjoy the occasion. It flips it, but yeah. Anyway, it's been a pleasure. I've been your host, Ollie Fisher. A reminder: check out merchandise. The link to that is in our pinned tweet. If not, it's in the description of the video on YouTube. If not, search our name on Redbubble. Been joined by Gian Mario.
Yeah, thank you. It's been good to be back, and hopefully I'll be on again next week celebrating,
of course, the permanent signing of Brahim Diaz. And Stefano.
Yeah, brilliant to be back, guys. And yeah, looking forward to a final with the best two teams in the competition, you know? So fair play. Let the best team win.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. Thank you very much for listening and watching, everybody, and we will catch you in a week's time.
Andrea Conti, bella palla per Rebic. Rebic Ibra. Rebic. Il tiro. Goal!